Welcome to Talking Absolute Worship. Occasionally the stars align and miraculous things happen, but most of the time they don't. So welcome, Lithan and Neil, as we embark upon another session of Talking Absolute Worship. We're on proper nine, which is usually the one that comes after proper eight, which was last week. And we've got a different set of challenges in our readings this week. But fortunately, research may be fresh in Neil's head as he shares with us some of the directions he might be going in. Neil, where are you going with this?
Well, thank you. These are fabulous readings. And so the caveat is there are hundreds of sermons in these readings, I think, but I want to dive in. I was really caught and held by how Zechariah 9 ends. So our reading ends, the last verse: "Return to your stronghold, O prisoners of hope. Today I declare that I will restore to you double." And it was that phrase, "prisoners of hope," that really kind of caught my attention. I mean, we talk about prisoners of conscience, but prisoners of hope is an interesting kind of juxtaposition, because hope, you know, hope is about something very wide and open, and being a prisoner of it just feels like that, you know, that how does that work? How, what does it mean to be a prisoner of hope? And so then, yeah, that
I'm hoping,
kind of,
you know, and I go, I'm hoping you're going to tell us.
Well, if you would give me a moment, I will, Phil. Thank
<I'm>
you.
On.
So I mean, the other thing about the Zechariah reading is that in for many of us, it will just feel odd. Here we are, quite a long way away from Palm Sunday, and bang, we are given the Palm Sunday reading. Lo, your King comes to you, triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So here we have a text that is about the king arriving, but of course, as many of us I think will have reflected, not least at Palm Sunday, you know, here is a text that speaks of a king not arriving on a war horse, not arriving with the chariots and the, you know, not an invasion in that sense. But nevertheless, this is about rejoicing greatly. Here comes a movement, a change, an arrival that is dramatic, but it is also countering many ideas. It's the arrival of a king, but there's humility here. It is the coming of a new age, a new era, a new reign. It is an invasion, maybe, but it's an invasion that is peaceable. It's that God is doing this work. Rejoice greatly, because this is what God is doing, and it is God who is setting people free. And that takes me to this idea of prisoners of hope. Perhaps one of the ways into preaching for this Sunday would be to explore what is it that holds us captive? What are we held by? And to what extent are we held by hope? Because it seems to me that Zechariah, coming towards the end of the Hebrew scriptures, is in many ways summing up what those entire set of scriptures have said. We are bound captive by our hope that God is real and at work, and that God saves, and that God is good. And that's what we find revealed. I mean, I suspect it's just conceivable that Phil, when we get to Psalm 145, you may want to have us notice that it talks about steadfast love. I mean, I would hate to steal your thunder, but, you know, that, we get that as well. You know, that again, what are we held by? And you know, I know that prisoner and captivity and being trapped is pastorally language to be sensitive about. And there will be people listening who may well know absolutely what it is like to be held captive in all sorts of different ways. So, you know, I'm being a bit flippant about it. I wouldn't want to be in the sermon. I'd want to explore what is it that holds us, that captivates us in all of the best ways possible. Because it seems to me that's what the Hebrew scriptures are doing in both the Zechariah and in the Psalm. And so I would want to, I would just want us as a congregation to be reading Psalm 145 rather than me necessarily preaching on it. But I would want us to hear that Zechariah text and be surprised. Oh, gosh, we're not on Palm Sunday and we've got the palm. Have they made a mistake? You know, oh, dear. Have they're reading the wrong thing. This is in the wrong place. No, this is in the right place. This is in the right place. Here we are, a long way from Palm Sunday, and we're being reminded again. And of course, how powerful it is then that this is a text that Jesus enacts. And we have the Matthew passage, and the Matthew passage is about how do people respond to Jesus? How do you react to him? And he's, you know, he's laying out, well, okay, you don't seem to be finding it very easy to respond to me, you know, because either I'm too much in love with life and I'm too happy and I'm too excitable and I'm too much fun to be with, so I can't be who you put your hope in, or I'm telling you what not to do, and I'm trying to help you discover things that might be bad for you, and then I'm not the right person. I'm not the right person for you, which is interesting given that we've got the idea of being prisoners of hope. What is our, you know, as Jesus unpacks that, I think he's saying, amongst other things, and he's saying an awful lot, and that's why I had the caveat. I think one of the things he's saying is actually, I've got something to offer you, and I do want to captivate you. I want you to give me your all. I'm going to give my all for you, and if you do, we get that amazing bit at the end. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. If you're carrying a heavy burden, lay it down, and I will give you rest. For I am gentle and humble in heart, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And what does it mean to be held captive by a hope like that? I guess I'd be wanting to reflect on, well, what does Jesus mean when he talks about having an easy yoke? Because, I mean, actually, in the Gospels, and not least by the time we get to this bit of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus has said a fair bit about how hard it's going to be. You know, this is not an easy ride. If you're going to stick with him, if you're going to follow him, not least if you're going to be in that crowd on Palm Sunday, goodness me, this, what does it mean? I'm not entirely sure that I know, but I guess one of the things that perhaps it means is that what Jesus offers us is a purpose. And a joining in with something that really, really does change the world and change us. And, you know, just for sake of completeness, Paul in Romans is in that kind of territory too. So the danger is, as you can see, I want to join them all together.
And
that's why I need
same.
To not preach on the psalm, but let the psalm be for someone else, and we could just read the psalm. I think that whole idea of joining in the Jesus movement, you know, being caught up in what God is doing, and being held by hope. If I didn't want to always use that word prisoner, being captivated, being held by, enthralled by hope. Because goodness me, I think we live in a world where hope can be in pretty short supply. And maybe we live in a church where hope can sometimes feel like it's in short supply. And maybe in our personal lives, hope can be in short supply. So I'd want this to be a sermon that somehow communicated just a superabundance of hope, so that and we'll come on to this, I guess, when we talk about other bits of the service, but somehow I'd want this to be a service that people were able to go away from feeling lifted up, and held by God. There you go.
That's fantastic, Neil. And that you picking out that verse or that fragment of a verse, "Prisoners of Hope," I think could be a really useful key to help preachers unlock some of the stuff in this. I think sometimes that's what we need as preachers. We need a key, a thing, a thing that holds it together. And I hadn't really spotted that. I was more drawn to the waterless pit, wondering what that was. So as you were speaking, I was reflecting on what that means. What does it mean to be a prisoner of hope? And this may sound facile, and you wouldn't expect it from a heavyweight like myself, something to sound facile. But believe me, it is a very real and true experience. People ask me, are sometimes a bit puzzled why, what on earth is the attraction of being a lifelong Bolton Wanderers fan? And I know there are countless tens of thousands of football fans in very similar shoes, for whom supporting this team feels like you are a prisoner to hope. It's something you want to escape from, but the hope. That's the hope. That's the is it? It is the hope that keeps you in, because each season starts afresh, and it's
Yep.
going to be life's going to be, however awful the past has been, however low you've sunk, and Bolton have sunk pretty low. You live for those moments of hope, and it's hope that keeps you in it. I'm not going to give it up because there's hope. It is awful. It's usually awful, and it usually ruins a perfectly good weekend. But occasionally. You live for the moments of hope. So yeah, very facile version, but it's very real in people's experience, and that's why they say it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? If you didn't have hope, you could easily give up on stuff. We can't give up on stuff because we have hope. Always, what's the verse? Always be ready to give a reason for the hope that is in you.
Yeah, give an account.
Oh, yeah, that's better. That's better. I like reason and account. Always be better to give an account of the hope that is in you. Is that how it goes? And what's the
Do it
verse?
with gentleness and respect.
Oh, blimey. That's right. Let's do Bible tags then, and we'll each explain the verse by three more words.
It's actually, I can't remember the whole of the always be ready to give an account for the hope that you have within you. It's a really difficult grammatical sentence to remember. So I know that's not quite how that bit goes, but then we often leave out, but do it with gentleness and respect, which I think it's a really helpful thing to have in
Says
there.
it all.
Yeah.
Talk about hope in a gentle way rather than in an aggressive way.
Yeah. Because the king is riding on a donkey.
Yeah, well, that's in there. Yeah. So yes, Neil, I do like that, and you've kind of focused a little bit on the beginning of Matthew there. I was a bit puzzled by the children sitting in the marketplace, and I looked up a few commentators to see what on earth is he on about. I don't know if anyone can be completely sure what the cultural reference is here, but there seems to be a kind of a vague agreement that these are children playing games in the marketplace where whilst the grown-ups are running the stalls, and they're playing two games. And the first game where they play in the flute is like a wedding game. They're inviting children to join in their wedding game, and they're sort of like playing the wedding procession with a flute. And then the other game they're playing is a funeral game. So they're doing sort of two different, wedding or funeral games, where the other one they sing a they wail and mourn, and they invite other children to join them in a wailing mourning procession. But some of the children don't join in, or they want to play a different game. And I think that's, I thought, oh yeah, that kind of makes some sense here, because Jesus comes playing his flute, singing his song of hope, if you want to continue your theme there. And A lot of us, like the kids, who just don't want to join. We want to play our own game. We're not interested in Judas's game. We want to play by our own rules. We want to do something different. We've got our own agendas, and we're not going to sing Judas's tune. And Jesus comes along, and we're not joining in. We're one of those stupid kids, one of those stubborn kids, one of those rebellious kids who won't. I'm going to play a different game. Can even play your game? So there we are. So Jesus plays his flute of hope. And we refuse to dance, or something like that. At the beginning of that, which I quite like the imagery of that, and it hooks in with your little bit from Zechariah. So thank you for that. Lithan, what direction were you going in?
Just to comment on Neil's, I think if you were listening last week, the language was of slaves and chains, and I think prisoners might be a good one to have instead of slave. And that actually here, the idea is that we're yoked to Jesus. So we're not enslaved to God, but that yoke and walking beside, I think, is a much more helpful, at least for me, because I don't like to be told what to do, image to have.
I think that yoked to Jesus thing was, I mean, I'm like 30 odd years old now, and it's taken me a long time, I think, to twig this whole yoke thing, because I always thought about this passage, his yoke, my yoke is easy. I think, well, okay, there's a huge burden here, and but Jesus's burden is an easy one, and I think, oh, yeah, okay, what difference does it make if you give me a yoke? It's still a big burden. But the point of the yoke isn't that we're yoked to a heavy burden. That's not the point. The point is that we're yoked to Jesus, and we're actually pulling the burden together. And I kind of, oh, why have not like seen it like that ever before in all my years of ministry? And I just thought, oh, the yoke just makes it easier to pull the burden. But that's not much of a comfort, is it, really? Because there's still a burden. But actually, if you think, nah, I'm yoked to Christ. So I'm not pulling this burden on my own. This is a burden that we bear together. Maybe that was where you were going.
Is what I was about to say.
Oh,
Anyway,
no.
but before that,
I can edit that bit out if you like, and
no,
then
it's fine.
it can sound like
Before
you
that, I
thought
wanted to talk about the beginning of what Matthew
of
says, and it reminded me of when we had our first baby. So we lived in Hartlepool, and if you've ever lived in the north of England, you'll know that people talk to you whether you like it or not. And so we'd taken new parents, taking the baby in its pram into Boots for something. And baby was quite happy to start with, and then got a little bit restless in the pram. But we were trying, shiggling it and everything. And people went, "Oh, you should pick that baby up. It's upset. You should pick the baby up." A little bit later on, we were in the queue, baby still crying. So one of us had picked the baby up and was tapping it and jiggling up and down. And someone went, "You should put that baby down. You'll spoil it doing that." I thought, you can't win. You can't win. You have to work out with babies what you think is going to be right. What can How do you raise this child with integrity and as much understanding as you can have, because you will never win with what's going on? And I read a different example this week from someone who said that he inherited a congregation where the main sanctuary had chairs. And he looked at this place and he thought, "This is going to be great because you can move chairs around and you can do lots of different things." And someone came up and went, "We loved it when our previous pastor used to do different things. Every week we'd be in different kind of shapes, and that would really help us with our worship." And then others would come up and go, "We hated it when he used to. We just like it to be the same every week." And I think that reminder where Jesus is saying, "I can't win, people will just choose to read into me and criticize what I'm doing." But that sense of Jesus has that integrity and says, "Nobody actually understands. Nobody knows the Son except the Father. Nobody knows the Father except the Son." And for us, I think finding our integrity and the way to go and continually check in with Jesus and say, "Am I doing the right thing in all of this? Because I know that people are going to criticize whatever happens. And you can't please everyone all of the time. in Christian faith, as in everything. And that's where being yoked to Jesus will help us, because we're not actually in this on our own. It means we don't have to face the criticism and the brickbats on our own. It means we don't get too puffed up when we've done things, because we've not done that on our own. And that's useful for us in our individual life, but also to know that it's doing things together with Jesus, but with each other, is the important thing. And that's what makes it easy. And the yoke would be fitted to the animals. You have special yokes, you know, you have tailor-made things, and that's what makes it easy, because if it doesn't fit, it will rub and it will make things more difficult for people. And I think that how do we live is by being yoked to Jesus, or walking the way, if we wanted to put it that way. But it's walking beside, I think, this image is, rather than following Jesus, will help us with Romans 7, where I think Paul is making excuses for his bad behavior, basically. Okay. And that reminds me again of when our children were small, that when the naughty invisible girl came to live with us for a while. So at that time, only having one daughter, when she told us the naughty invisible girl had done something, we tended to think it was her. But why come up with that name? Really, kind of gave it away. But that's kind of what this is going. Oh, I know, I don't want to do these things, and I end up doing them. And it's the sin that dwells in me that does it. That's the naughty invisible girl bit. And you think, you know, I can't do things. I want to do right, and I just can't. And I get overwhelmed in it. But actually, we have freedom through Jesus. And that's where being yoked to Jesus will help us, because it, and I think what's helpful in Paul is saying it's a constant struggle. Don't think that once you've taken, you know, you've become a person of faith, that means living a Christian life is easy, because it really isn't. He's saying the whole time there's this bit of you that wants to do things that are wrong, or you want to be lazy, or, you know, some things you do deliberately, sometimes you don't. But there's all of this going on for us the whole time. You've got to be attentive to it. And that's where being yoked to Jesus will help with that. And I think in that sense, Prisoners of Hope is a good way also to talk about being yoked to Jesus, in that we're not totally free, but actually I'm happy with that. I'm happy to be walking with Jesus and be yoked to Jesus, because that will help me in my battle with myself. That's what Paul's talking about in Romans. And in all of that, I guess then, remembering the psalm where it says God's actually slow to anger and merciful and abounding in steadfast love, helps us when we do fall prey to the naughty invisible girl, or if we want to, you know, when that pushing the red button just overwhelms us, or touching the wet paint, all those things that we find hard to resist, and we know we should, but there's something in humanity that makes us sometimes want to make bad choices, that God is good and will forgive us. As long as we really try not to do those same things again, which is what we used to say to the naughty invisible girl and her friend.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder if you've just been a bit harsh on Paul. Usually, because I'm a staunch defender of Paul. he's such a staunch defender I am. Because I think he's describing what will be an almost universal experience, however people, whatever language people use to put it in. And even if it's, you know, it sounds as petty as New Year's resolutions or diets, or it's an experience everybody can identify with. And at the same time, that offers the preacher a sort of like a bit of a pitfall, that it's very easy to spell out the problem, isn't it, with Paul's language here, and then you've set up this overpromise that you're going to tell them how to overcome it. There's no shortage of self-help books that are written on this exact theme. You know, why don't diets work? It's because it's not about trying hard. It's not about trying again to do it better, or, you know, making a resolution, or it's not just because you're lazy. And there's a ton of self-help books written around this. And again, I think they perhaps overpromise on fixing it, because maybe this is just part of what it is to be human that Paul is struggling with. But given what Neil said, I'm noticing stuff in here that I didn't notice before, particularly the rather obvious bit at the end where he says, "I am captive to the law of sin," which is the direct opposite parallel of what Zechariah says. Zechariah is God's promise that we will be captive to hope.
Mm.
Paul is saying, "I'm still captive to sin." Mm-hmm. So maybe this is kind of an illustration that helps us bring out what we're captive to. And I do like your extension of that picture into being voluntarily captive to the ox, what we are yoked to next to us, which is Jesus.
Mm.
So there's tons of bits to fit together. I suppose the trick is to leave the congregation with something that helps them with the dilemma. And I think you've offered us a way to do that, Lithan. There's loads of stuff about yokes, and it'd be easy to get drawn into yokes, wouldn't it? I think you were hinting at something you must have read in William Barclay when you were a child, Lithan. Remember that series of William Barclay books? Because his take on this was, I just thought at the time, was just utterly mawkish. But I think maybe there's something in it now. But he said, well, of course, what this means... because that's what William Barclay sounded like. Of course, what this means is that the yoke is easy fitting. It doesn't mean the burden's easy. It means the yoke is easy, so well fitting. And he then mused that Jesus, as a carpenter, used to make yokes, and hanging out his shop outside his shop was the slogan, "My yokes are well fitting." And I kind of thought, I don't like it. But I kind of do like the idea behind it, but not the Jesus had a sign outside his shop that he was well known for his well-fitting yokes. So therefore he said, "Come and get your yokes, easy-fitting yokes." And then he picked that up in his later ministry. My yoke is easy. Because you all remember me making yokes, don't you? But there is something in that. Deuteronomy tells us that you can't yoke unequal beasts. Against the law, literally. You can't yoke a kangaroo to a rabbit, because it would be unfair on the rabbit. Or a camel to a sheep. You could have some fun with that with the children's address, couldn't you?
That is the children's address.
However, yoking ourselves to Christ, surely that's the ultimate unequal yoke. But Christ voluntarily empties himself, and so maybe there's something powerfully theological in there. I mean, think, hang on, we can't be yoked to God. That's the ultimate unequal yoke. Mm. We'll be at a disadvantage because God's going to pull much quicker than we are because he's like super strong. But Christ matches. So we're supposed to be matching our pace to Christ, but I think there's as much the other way around of Christ matching his pace to us. Because part of that yoking thing is matched pace, isn't it? Both the beasts have got to walk at the same pace. And so who's matching the pace? Am I matching my pace to Christ, or is Christ matching his pace to me to make that yoke fit and work? There is, as Neil said, so much in these readings. There are loads of little rabbit holes to go down. Of course, yoke is also used in the Bible to mean slavery. We touched on this last week. It makes it less appealing if you say, "My slavery is easy."
Yep.
So again, care with language is good here, but it is often used to talk about slavery in the Bible. Yoke, it's one of the meanings. Although I did look at the Greek, it appears to be no support for William Barclay's idea that it means well-fitting. Does mean easy. I looked it up. I looked up Strong's Greek Bible numbers, but I still think it could be taken that way, even if it doesn't mean that way, because a yoke has to fit, otherwise it chafes, and it's
Yeah,
not good.
I don't think it's to take away the word easy to mean well fitting, but I think it still has to be well fitting to work.
Yeah, it does. And I think the complication in this passage that I've had is that I've thought that it says the burden is easy. I suppose it does actually say the burden is easy, but it also says the yoke is easy. And my burden is light. The burden is light and the yoke is easy. So it's not that the yoke is, the definition of an easy yoke would be one that fits well, wouldn't it? So, I mean, it does work. But there you go. Yoked to Christ. Not to a heavy load, which is reassuring. You can't, I like sure you can't win stuff. I think that will appeal to a congregation. John was accused of being too dour and miserable. Jesus was accused of being a party animal. Oh, you can't win, can you? And Jesus is frustrated. It's like Jesus, go, oh, for goodness sake, I can't win, can I? Just showing that sort of human frustration with how people are. Maybe many preachers, ministers will also re relate to that, as your stories did. So yeah, tons in this, as we normally say. I will avoid commenting on steadfast love, as you may notice, appears in Psalm 145. There we are. I said, I believe the word is well, steadfast love. Fortunately, there's other stuff that we can do to try and bring these passages alive for our congregations. So, Neil, how are you going to entertain your congregation members?
So I guess three things that I'd be playing with. I think one is, it feels to me, again, I mean, whichever of these readings you go for, I think in terms of what we sing together, you'd be wanting to sing some really resounding, uplifting hymns, and have music that, and that'll, I mean, that'll be different in different congregations. But that would be, so that'd be one thing that, again, I think this whole act of worship needs to be something celebratory and full of hope. So that's one thing. This may come as a surprise, but I am wondering if there might be a way for people to take something away after this service. Because you've
Some
just got
hope. They could
some,
take some hope away.
exactly, you've just got some absolute bangers when it comes to phrases. And just little snippets. So, I mean, the simplest way of doing that would be to print something out on paper and invite people to take it away. But another thing you could do, and I mean, I know you'd have to explore all of the environmental consequences of this, but I don't know if you've seen, but you can now get things that are half the size of a business card. So if you think of the size of a business card, but then slice it in half, so you get a sort of very small rectangular thing, which can, I mean, online you can get them printed very cheaply for large numbers because they're so tiny. But they're the sort of thing that fit into a purse or fit into a wallet or whatever. Dare I say it, could even be stuck on a fridge with a magnet if you had one. And it would just be fun, I think, to have like a whole range of these that took some of just a line or even a phrase from these Bible texts, and just have like a wonderful kind of almost just a huge basin of them. And as people come in and as they leave, invite people to just grab some, and in, so that you're. And maybe say to people, is there someone that you might give this to this week? Is there someone that you know for whom that idea that Jesus wants to give you a lighter burden, is that something you could take away? So, and that could lend itself into the prayers of intercession and thanksgiving, but something to take away. So that's a couple of things, but there is also a poem, and I mean, if you look for poems about hope, you'll find all sorts of things. But one of my favorites is by Emily Dickinson. And if I can do the sherry thing, and there's a wonderful, very short video of it being spoken aloud. And you could just, if you've got the technology available, you could play this perhaps after reading that Zechariah passage. And then just have some silence and just let it do what it could do. So if I do the right sort of share, and I need to share that, I think. And then if I do that, there.
Yep, do that. Do
Trying to do that,
that. Don't
but I
do
keep
that.
there we go. Here we are.
The thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that would abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, and never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all, and sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that would abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, and never in extremity it asked a crumb of me.
Very good. I've not come across that before.
I can't stop it now.
It has
Stop.
stopped our,
Yes. Thank
stopped
you.
our end. Yeah, we can't hear it. Now, thank you, Neil. Thank you. A poem about hope. That doesn't rhyme, but that means it avoids all the obvious rhymes like pope and slope,
And rope.
which would create a very different kind of a poem. So thank you for that. So we've got some little cards with verses on and poetry. Lithon and
Oh.
music.
Several random things. So one would be perhaps, especially if you've got some children there, to talk about yokes that fit. You could either have some clothes that just would be far too big for them, or you could have some work things, so I suppose, that would just be too big, so like a big drill or something that's not going to be the right size, or a hard hat that's not going to fit a child. And it's this idea that when we work with Jesus, what we've got is something that fits us well. And then I've also got talking about having things to give to people. This is from, so you can look up a site called Home with the Boys. There's a free printable, and this is the message version of these words, which I just love. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. And I'd quite like to give that to people on a small card. and just repeat the lines over and over again, and encourage them actually to go home and learn at least some of it off by heart. And I think the rhythm of, especially the walk with me, work with me, watch how I do it, learn the unforced rhythms of grace, is something that you can learn, and will really help in understanding what it means to walk with Jesus. And it's this, there's something really refreshing and of hope in that. I think when we're finding Christian life difficult, hearing it phrased like that, what Jesus is promising us, is really liberating and full of hope. And then my last random thing, let's see if I can, I can't even remember how to make it bigger. Oh, there we go. From current slide. There we are. So this is a story called Sometimes I'm Bombaloo. And it's about a little girl who can't control her feelings some of the times. So this would go with Romans. I think it also applies to menopausal women and possibly men of a certain age as well, where just the rage gets to her. So I'm going to see if I can get to. So this is where she's made a little castle somewhere. Is it gone now? Oh, yeah, a bit further on. She's made a little castle and her brother comes and smashes it.
And just say, that's okay. But sometimes I'm Bombaloo. I show my teeth and make fierce noises. My face scrunches tight like a monster's. I use my feet and my fists instead of my words. My toys end up all over the floor, and so does my brother. There is a lot of yelling when I'm Bombaloo, and some pointing at my bed. I have to go take some time for myself and think about it.
That's just a little snippet, but I love that. I just love that, where it's Paul going, I know how I should behave, but sometimes I'm Bombaloo, and just goes, and it's about regulating your feelings. But I think, and for me again, that is, how do we do that? It's by spending time not just by myself but with Jesus, and learning the unforced rhythms of grace once more.
Thank you. Yes, I too picked out. I was picking out the phrase rather than the whole thing. So thank you for showing us the whole set of verses from the message. But I often have that phrase, the unforced rhythms of grace, because I think it's such a just a great way. And the way that the message puts it takes us away from worrying about beasts of burden and wooden yokes and trying to work out how that all works, because it manages to say the same thing without using those words, so there's no explanation required. Dr. Barclay, there you are. But I did get distracted a bit by yokes and what that might look like, and unequal yokes, and how it's impossible if there are unequal yokes. I thought the closest we might get to do that, after having a serious word with your church health and safety officers and safeguarding people, you can then go ahead and organize some three-legged race activities in morning services, where you three-legged together a huge tall man and a tiny child, for instance, or inappropriately yoked or three-legged race people. And I thought that might give them an illustration about that, and then talk about, what would it mean to be in perfect harmony with the person you're three-legged tied to? They're the ones that win. They're not necessarily the biggest, the strongest, the most powerful. They're the two that are working together in harmony are the ones that win a three-legged race. And that's what the Bible is trying to say about being yoked to Christ, is that we have common purpose, vision, we've matched our pace. All of those things, I think, might be a way into that. If you've got a congregation that just likes a bit of fun in the morning and a trip to A&E, entirely possible. also, yeah, not if you've got like steps and stuff, option for falling off the stage. The other thing, maybe it might suit a style of worship that's more of a cafe church style than a sitting in rows style, but some people do that. And I wonder whether there might be some space to allow people to articulate what they feel are the burdens and the loads that they're carrying, because I imagine there are loads of them. And the message version brings out quite powerfully that some of those burdens are going to be church burdens. They're going to be burdens that we've laid on them. They're going to be saying, I don't want to be church secretary anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And many of us will have experienced people laying down those burdens since COVID. And we're trying to get people to take up burdens, not let them go. And so an honest conversation about what those burdens are. But then people have got all sorts of other burdens that have been imposed upon them that they haven't chosen, that relate to looking after parents, looking after partners, taking on the larger share of childcare. Whatever it is, people have come to church with burdens. And sometimes it's good to have an honest conversation and maybe start to ask, how does it make a difference that Christ offers to enter our world and share the burdens with us and help us pull them, or maybe help us set some of them down? And if so, how do we make those judgments about which burdens to set down? Because nobody wants to be church secretary. But so that's there you go. Well, I have just found a new church secretary. So yay. Some conversation about that I thought might be helpful for people about carrying burdens and that kind of stuff. How you'd conclude that, I don't know. But what was I going to say? I've forgotten. I had something interesting to say. But it's just gone. I'm sure it will come back another day on Talking Absolute Worship. So, loads of ideas. And these are rich passages. And there is stuff in here that people will identify with. Pick a way to go. I think Neil's offered a great way in with this Prisoners of Hope idea. And Lithan's offered a great way in with the words from the Message. Both of those will be a great way in to all of these passages and tying those things together. Is there anything else anybody wants to say before we finish? No? In that case, we have been talking absolute worship. And we are real preachers, difficult as that might be to believe, who will be preaching to real people at Proper Nine, just as you will be, or unless you're just tuning in to this as a hobby, you're not actually a preacher, then this is a serious task to which we are all called. And I'm going to ask Lithan to pray with us as we set about that task.
Lord, bless us all in our preparation. Help us to find the ways to share your hope, to enable people to be reminded of the unforced rhythms of grace that are part of following you. Direct our thinking and our speaking, and direct our lives so that we will not give in to those struggles against doing the bad things, but through all of our lives we will remain yoked to you and able to demonstrate what it means to keep company with you and living freely and lightly, freed from all the things that can hold us back and filled with hope in you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.